Lisa, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us on the program.
My pleasure.
Now, looking at the Groove in the Mood drug testing tent, there were some 128 people that ended up in the tent having their pills tested. Would you say this was a bit of a success? I've got to say, with Groove in the Mood, it's a very popular festival, and I would suspect there was more than sort of 100-odd people that were actually at the festival maybe taking a little bit of happy pills.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think it's a success for a start. We'd like to see more of that. I think harm minimization programs are really important, and Australia has an amazing record of success with them. And this could be the start of a new kind of important harm minimization program that addresses the kinds of drugs that young people are taking.
And it's interesting, too, because we heard all this coverage of some of the horrible things that were found in some of the pills. Some of the pills were found to contain little muscle relaxants, paints.
Yeah.
There was a couple of ones that actually did have quite lethal doses of some things. And, toothpaste and another, which I guess is great if you want your drugs to leave you minty fresh.
Minty fresh from the stomach inside out. Yeah. I mean, it's a good reminder that, with illegal drugs, you don't really know what you're getting. And you might think that you're buying ecstasy or whatever, MDMA. So many things that you might get that are not what you think you're taking. And so I think that's one of the reasons why these pill testing programs are so important, because they really are a way to concretely educate people about what they might be putting in their mouths, which is not to say that the drugs that they think they're taking are necessarily safe either. But this gives them a chance to realize that you don't know what you're buying, you know? So I think it serves a really important educational function. Okay, maybe it was only 100-some people who had their drugs tested, but there's been a ton of media coverage, and so that's a wake-up call to everybody who's thinking about buying drugs at a festival.
And yet, if you look at the 128 that ended up having their pills tested, as you say, there's been a great deal of education, which is terrific, but of the 128, only 5 of those people actually binned their drugs in the tent. They tested, they found
that's
what was
right
in them, and they go, okay, I'm not going to take these. And, only a very small number said they would consider binning the drugs when they'd actually left the tent, something like 10
to
20%.
Yeah, 10 to 20% said they were going to think about binning their drugs. That was a little disappointing. But look, they bought the drugs, so I guess we shouldn't be surprised that they planned to take the drugs if the drugs were what they thought they were getting.
But if we want to sort of minimize harm, I mean, as much education that might come out of this, it sounds like a very small percentage are kind of acting on that education.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Harm minimization programs don't assume that we're going to stop people from taking drugs. If you look, the number of people historically, like worldwide and in Australia, who take drugs, that number has stayed pretty steady. Throughout the war on drugs, even as funding for the global war on drugs has increased exponentially, the rate of people using illicit drugs has stayed pretty steady over the decades. It's slightly increased, in fact. So what that suggests is that there is a steady percentage of people in the population who want to experiment with drugs. So the principle of harm minimization says, okay, we may not be able to stop this. We probably can't. It seems to be something in human nature or a human society to experiment with things. But what we can do is try to help them so that if things go wrong, we can minimize the harm. And it's not just the harm to the individuals, but harm to society. So, for example, if you look back at the needle exchange programs that were introduced in Australia in the 80s. Okay, so imagine, picture this. We've got early 1980s. The first recorded cases of HIV in Australia. And at this time, HIV was deadly. It's not like today where you can live a long, pretty healthy life using antiretroviral drugs, right?
Mm.
At that time, it was a death sentence, right? And so there was this group of activists and doctors working in the drug and alcohol field. Alex Wodak was one of them, and he's published on the topic, right? So they said, okay, what we need to do is introduce needle exchange programs to our injecting drug using population in Australia so that we can reduce the rates of HIV transmission amongst this community, right? And the people who opposed that said, no, you tell people that they can have free needles. It's like you're saying to them, go ahead and take heroin. We know you want to take drugs, And so they implemented this at a time, so they implemented this needle exchange program, this group of activists, at a time when it was still illegal. But the police decided that they weren't going to pursue it and prosecute. And pretty soon thereafter, the Australian government followed suit and introduced its own needle exchange program. And as a result, I mean, Australia was really a pioneer in harm minimization. And as a result, we have a very, very low and steadily low rate of HIV prevalence amongst the injecting drug user population. And that's precisely because of harm minimization policies. It didn't change the number of people who were taking heroin. In fact, that's dropped off over time slightly, but at the same time, we've seen more injecting drug users injecting methamphetamine. But we have reduced the rates of HIV transmission, and that's a major harm, not just to the drug users, but to society because of the cost to our healthcare system.
That is tremendously encouraging, I would have to say, Lisa. Just as a final point, as we mentioned there, there were some practical concerns with the drug testing tents. Some festival goers saying they had a bit of a hard time tracking it down, even if they wanted to use it. Now, I understand drug testing tents have been used in other countries. Looking at this first attempt by Australia, is there anything that you would sort of recommend that we might be able to learn from other attempts, or even learn from our first attempt, that would actually improve these operations in future?
Yeah, look, I'd love to see it, of course, better signed and more awareness. I mean, this was the first time and it had been introduced without, you know, with a police commitment to not police the area around the tent. So that's a great start, and we can definitely go further. I mean, what we've seen is, like, for example, in Portugal, where they decriminalized drug use in the year 2000. In the decade that followed, there was the overall rate of drug use dropped in Portugal slightly. So, you know, we could see something similar happening. And when you're not spending money policing drug use, but instead spending the money toward helping people to address drug problems in their lives, you know? I mean, I think that's great for society. So I'd like to see this part of that whole, a trend in Australia. That would be fantastic for the country.
Terrific. Well, Lisa, thank you very much. Really do appreciate your time on this one.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.